ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
ॐ दट् ब्रह्मन् इज़् इन्फिनिट् एण्ड् दिस् यूनिवर्स् इज़् आल्सो इन्फिनिट् दि इन्फिनिट् proceeds from the infinite. Taking the infinitude of the infinite universe, it remains as the infinite Brahman alone. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. Of all the Upanishads, this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is the not only biggest, it is the most important. And that's why Shankaracharya had written an elaborate commentary upon it. Earlier, I have given some introduction. Who was this author, the writer, or the manifester of this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad? The real author is only God, Brahman. But Brahman had revealed this Upanishad to Yajnavalkya through the deity called Surya Deva, the sun god. And that is why it came to be known as Shukla Yajurveda. The entire Shukla Yajurveda was a kind, graceful revelation of this highest spiritual truth to Yajnavalkya because he prepared himself to receive it. Many times we do not understand what is the meaning of prayer, and even more important, why prayers are not answered. It is just like an analogy. Two persons go to the ocean. With one person goes with a small glass, another person goes with a huge tanker, and then both of them receive water. But the person with a glass complains, why are you bestowing so much upon the other person, whereas you have given me only a small glass full? Of course, the ocean will not reply, but common sense will tell us that it is not that the ocean refuses to give you, but you are not ready to receive it. Or whatever capacity of reception you have, that much you got full. This is what Sri Ramakrishna used to call, the breeze of God's grace is always blowing, but you have to unfurl your sails. That means you should be ready to receive the grace which has not started at a particular point of time, but forever it is blowing. Here grace means knowledge. And if we do sadhana, gradually increase our capacity of our mind, then we will be able to receive as much as our mind is ready to receive. Imagine there is a room full of objects, and you want to buy something huge and put it there. You cannot, because there is no space. So you will have to throw out, remove many objects, sufficient at least to keep that newly bought object. In the same way, our mind is full of thoughts about the world, mithya jagat, avidya world. Sadhana is not meant to receive the grace of God. I repeat, sadhana is not meant to receive the grace of God. Sadhana is meant to make our minds pure. Purity means emptying the mind of all thoughts. And just like space, as soon as a place is vacant, immediately it becomes available. That is, the space becomes available. You can keep whatever you want there. God's grace, you don't need to invite, you don't need to pray. So Yajnavalkya completely removed all thoughts. That is called purification of the mind. That is called destroying all attachments. Instantaneously, as soon as a place is vacant, space enters there. Rather, it is already there. Now it becomes more manifest.
This is the clear concept of what is called receiving the grace of God. And Yajnavalkya received it to the full. That means he removed 100% of his mind. Then what remained was Brahman. And that's why he was called Brahmavit. And Brahmavit, as we saw in the Taittiriya Upanishad, apnoti param. He attains everything. He becomes satyam jnanam anantam brahma. So in the introduction we have seen, this is the biggest of the Upanishads, and it is usually taught to renunciates in the forest. Forest means a place where one can pursue the spiritual studies, spiritual sadhanas. Spiritual study and spiritual sadhana are not two separate things. Just like a scientist, scientific knowledge is not a dry knowledge. It is first thought about, then experimented upon. It becomes a provable knowledge. Proven knowledge becomes forever provable knowledge. Take the same steps, one should get the same result. Brahmajnanam is no exception to it. That is the real meaning. So, where there is no distraction, the mind also, because of the absence of distractions, can also remain equanimous, more calm. We have not developed so much that we can afford to be in this, what is called, huge storm on the ocean and remain in that ocean called Samsara Sagara and expect to be calm and quiet. So if we can, we have to help ourselves by going into solitude, which Ramakrishna used to call Nirjanasthan. Do not depend upon anything. Everything is perishable, non-dependable. Only God is dependable. That is called solitude. And it is this for the solitude. And there is also another thing. A forest is the most natural expression of nature. And to be in contact with nature itself is extraordinarily calming. So when a person starts to live and enjoy the bounty of the forest, fruits, roots, etc., without contamination by artificial fertilizers, etc., the mind of a person becomes very, very pure. Whereas we are all living cultivated with fertilizers and pesticides, etc., how much harm is being done? Now scientists are astonished how much plastic is going into the fishes, into the animals, into our own bodies. God alone knows. And when the food is impure, an ahara is not sattvic ahara, shuddha ahara, then our remembrance of who we are also will be affected by it. That is why Visishtadvaitins, Bhaktas, give so much of importance for food. I have narrated an incident. Once Holy Mother bestowed her grace upon one of her disciples and asked him not to eat food in anybody's house, excepting at the Chairambati, Holy Mother's Prasada, or the next best choice, the cooking of one's own mother. The devotee disobeyed it, thinking that, after all, I am taking food from a devotee's house. Instantaneously, his mind came down, fallen, and he received a shock. Then mother must have told him, "Why did you disobey me? You should have come back here." Such is the effect of food. Sri Ramakrishna could not touch the food, let alone cooked, even touched by impure people. So forest affords us natural food, healthy food, and also healthy environment. And there, distractions are very, very less. If distractions are not less, that's not a forest, even if it is a forest. We have to understand the inner meaning. Forest means where a person's mind can remain naturally, without effort, calm and quiet, equanimous. That is real forest. A house also can be like that. There is a beautiful Sanskrit verse. So one's own home Swagruham itself can become the greatest ashrama, provided the environment is kept like that. Kshudiram's home became such a heaven of peace. Anyway, we already introduced Brihadaranyaka, and people used to study. Two types of people used to study there. One is the vanaprasthis, householders, and then another is monks who renounced. After living for some time as a vanaprastha ashrama, then when he becomes ready, some of them don the ochre robe, but not necessary. Sannyasa, vanaprastha ashrama are not physical external stages, they are development of the purity of the mind. That's what we might discuss them in future. This Brihadaranyaka Upanishad mainly is divided into three parts: Madhukanda, Munikanda, Khilakanda. Kanda means a chapter. Madhukanda means the chapter called honey. Honey means everything is interconnected. Why is everything interconnected? Because the source, the ultimate cause is Brahman, and everything comes out Brahman. Like many children of the same parents are interconnected, blood related, and that is how it's called Madhukanda. And if we do not realize it, that I am separate, you are separate, I can do whatever I like with you, so also you can do, and that brings disastrous results. So it is called Madhukanda. Then the second part is called Munikanda, Yajnavalka Kanda, because there are marvelous discussions went on about the highest knowledge and also about many of the important contemplations called Upasanas. And Yajnavalka explains everything to his challengers, and he also becomes the guru of Janaka Maharaja, and he also becomes the teacher of one of his own wives called Maitreyi, and most marvelous teachings are there. The last kanda is Khila Kanda. This is what we call appendix or appendicitis or whatever, where various distorted things, disconnected things kept together. Some of them are marvelous things. So these are the three important divisions of this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And again, each adhyaya or kanda is subdivided into two. So 3 into 2, total there are 6 chapters. And then some of them are repetitions, especially the conversation between Yajnavalkya and Maitreyi, repeated in another section. And there is also remembrance of lineage, spiritual lineage, Guru Parampara system, that also is there. So, in Madhukanda, the primary teaching is Upadesha of Brahmagnana. Therefore, it is called also Upadesha Kanda. And second, this is compared to Shravana, because that is our goal. Second is Munikanda, Yajnavalkya Kanda. In this second chapter, the teachings given are supported by logic. Logic or upapatti is used. That is why it is called logical explanations of these real teachings are given in the first chapter. And the person who explains such with superb intelligence and clarity is none other than Yajnavalkya himself. So if the first kanda can be compared to Shravana, the second kanda, Munikanda, Yajnavalkya Kanda, Upapatti Kanda can be compared to Manana. That is, go on deeply churning, thinking. Manana means churn the mind, keeping all the acquired knowledge and all the dirt, dust and unnecessary things are removed. Pure, what is called butter, is distilled from there. And what Sri Ramakrishna often uses this: there is no harm after being churned if the butter is kept in what you call buttermilk or water, it never mixes. But without that, the milk can get spoiled. So this is the second chapter and the main guru is Agnivalkya. Kilakanda. That is what is called a miscellaneous chapter. In this part, various kinds of upasanas, that is contemplations, various types of rituals are found. Why are they found? It doesn't seem logical. First, there should be logical what is called rituals and contemplations. Then, logical explanations about Brahmagnana. And lastly, pure Brahmagnana. No, sir. First, the goal is explained. Then, it is made to be understood with various logics, etc. Supported by logic, the teachings become much more acceptable. But to transform them into practical Vedanta, we have to start from where we are standing, or even sitting, or even lying down, and move forward. So, this is the very logical way of dividing. Now, we will talk about what is the meaning of the Upanishad. In many of the Upanishads, we have explained, but it is very necessary to go through it. First, because of our memory. Second, because repetition only drives deep the meaning into our subconscious and unconscious minds. That is what we need to understand. This word Upanishad, according to Shankaracharya, is divided into three small words, Upa, Ni, Sat. And Upa and Ni are prefixes. The real word is Sad. Sad means, according to Shankara himself, that which it destroys. What does it destroy? Sad means knowledge. What does knowledge destroy? Knowledge always destroys only ignorance, nothing else. Ignorance in Vedanta is called avidya. So, Brahma Vidya is that which destroys ignorance. If one attains Brahma Vidya, then Brahman ignorance. Ignorance of Brahman is destroyed. They are simultaneous process. As soon as we bring light, darkness disappears, things are revealed, stand revealed. So according to the scripture, our Vedas, the cause of our bondage, called worldly existence, samsara, is ignorance of Brahman. If Brahma Vidya, that is true knowledge, about whom? About our own nature, who am I? So, koham, kastvam, kutayataha, tattvam chintaya, tadiha brataha. So, Brahma Vidya destroys the very cause of worldly existence, which is called avidya. And when the cause ceases to exist, the effect of the cause also will be destroyed. As soon as you come to know that this is a rope, not a snake, the fear, the palpitation will be automatically destroyed. Not only so, destruction of the false knowledge, but the result of the effect of the false knowledge will also be destroyed. Brahma avidya nashe, its effect, samsara nashaha. That's what happens. Why should we destroy samsara? If anybody is doubting, worldly existence, samsara means problems arising from gaining, loss, everything. Many times, gaining also causes great sorrow. How does it cause? If somebody is promoted, 100 or 1,000 eyes will be glaring at him, scorching him. What right have you got to get what you got? Each one of us should have got there. Whoever rises to that position will get the same looks. How many people are waiting to kill the presidents, prime ministers in every country? Worldly existence means problems. Problems means sorrow. Sorrow is opposite our nature. How do we know? Because we never lift even a small finger to what is called destroy happiness. But the moment even the slightest sorrow comes, immediately, automatically, we want to get rid of it. And according to Vedanta, all sorrows come from three factors. What is that? This external world represented by gross body, internal world, our mental reactions caused by what is called the mental world, and the root cause of both is karana, causal world. So, gross body, subtle body, causal body. Any sorrow comes only from these three. So, there is another way, explanation also is there. So, that which causes sorrow from our body and external world is called adhyatma. But that which comes from God, what is called from the external world, earthquakes or lack of rain or occupation by other people, people who cheat of honest people's savings, etc. And that also because of one's own prarabdha actually. So, there is a third, God or Brahman also is not only creator, but he is also the supporter, sustainer. And if we do not recognize, if we are not grateful what we are receiving for, then great destruction will come. They will send is what is called too much rain, too less of rain, unseasonal rain, earthquakes or wars, pestilences or germ warfare. All these things come. Unfortunately, we blame them on other people, not knowing we are the other people. Our government is nothing but our representation. Collective representation is called our government. So, worldly existence means problems arising from tapa, sorrow, tapatraya. Liberation from worldly existence is moksha, cessation from sorrow. Brahmavid apnoti param. So, along with Brahman, he enjoys everything. Brahmavidya gives two fruits. It destroys ignorance and it grants liberation. There is no separate thing called liberation. To know that I was, I am, I will be ever free, that is to know that is called liberation. That is one meaning of the word sat. There is another word. It means lead, that which leads us to the right goal. So, what does lead us? Sat means knowledge of self, Brahman. Brahmavidya, where does it lead us? So, Brahmavidya leads to Brahman. It means what? Leading means what? It means it makes us completely become one with Brahman, or to know there are no Brahman and me, only one thing, and that is Brahman. I am that Brahman. That's why it is said, Brahmavid apnoti param. So, one meaning of sad is destruction of ignorance. Second meaning is that which leads us to Brahman. And what is the good of it? The nature of Brahman is what? Sat, Chit, Ananda. Ananda means bliss. So, Sad means that which leads each one of us to Brahman, which means to bliss, which means to counter death, which means complete knowledge, all consciousness, I am Brahman. Thus, attainment of Brahman means I am Ananda Swarupa. So, we have seen both. Then, we have to see what is the meaning of Ni. Ni is a prefix. And Nisseshena Nashayati. We have to presume that meaning. That means there would be not even a little bit remnant of avidya. Completely. That which eradicates, destroys, so uproots the samsara vriksha. That is called, that what it does it? Ni. What does it do? Who does it? Sat. So, Ni means there would be that a little bit of samsara, a little bit of Brahman. No. Completely. So, what is the problem? Sat, whatever knowledge we have, that is our problem. Knowledge is received by the mind, developed by the mind. But then mind means there is also intellect. So our mind, our understanding, buddhi and manas are ever at conflict. I know aham brahmasmi, but my mind says, you idiot, you liked this sweet very much. Now get to work, and enjoy that sweet. This ever opposing force, that's why it is called Dvandva, is haunting us ever since creation. So therefore, mere knowledge will not do. Our identity with the body, our identity with our possessions, our identity with the family, and our hatred of other people, both of them lead to bondage only. That's why it is said, papam is also gives us sorrow, punyam also gives us more sorrow. How come? Because if papam is like a person who falls a little bit down from a short height, punyam, you go to the Swargaloka, the path you fall down, which is extraordinarily painful. That's why we must rise beyond both virtue and vice. But in the beginning, get rid of the vice. Later on, we have to get rid of virtue also. We must go beyond that. So we must go beyond dharma, beyond artha, beyond kama. Then only moksha is possible. So in spite of knowledge, we have got passions, hatreds, aversions, desires, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madha, matsarya. These are called obstacles to right knowledge. So these feelings are not only come from the past birth, but in this birth also, unfortunately, we reinforce them instead of cutting them down. So all these things are sure to affect the mind, but Vedanta knowledge also arises in the intellect. Doubts also arise in the intellect until definitive knowledge arises. If the mind is not kept under control, shamadamadi shat sampatti, this knowledge does not really work. That is why even when we understand intellectually Vedanta, we are unable to keep serene and quiet, equanimous in the face of ups and downs of life. And this is the problem of all humanity. Only just a selected few, manushyanam sahasresh, try to jump out of the net, as Ramakrishna gives the analogy of the fish, and only a few succeed in it. That is why we have to start our life in having faith, not in Vedanta Shastra, but in Dharma Shastra. What does Dharma Shastra do? Like a spiritual doctor, like a physical doctor, this is a spiritual doctor. It says, if you want physical health, mental health, every type of health, then you will have to stop doing these things and start doing these things. They are called nishedha. Do not even think of doing them. Or if, because we have already done, slowly try to reduce them by replacing them with what should be done. That is called vidhi. So only when one leads a dharmic life, these obstacles of avidya or misconception will become absent. It takes time gradually. So that knowledge which arises in an intellect free from all doubts and in a mind free from the obstacles of misconception or ajnana, that is called in Vedanta Sanskrit apratibandhaka jnanam, knowledge of the absence of all the obstacles. So to remove misconceptions, how do we do that? So as I said, first we have to go to a guru. And then what does the guru do? He first prescribes rituals and then contemplations. First rituals, then contemplations, and then when the guru finds a fit person, he starts giving us what is called upadesha, teaching. And that teaching is called shravanam. The shravana is not merely listening to a lecture like this. For that, we have to be ready. And then whatever is received must be made firm through the process of churning the mind until the last vestige of doubt is totally removed. And one that happens, then we have to fight with the old samskaras, bring in new samskaras, and that is called nididhyasana, means remove the unspiritual samskaras replacing them with spiritual samskaras until we reach the doorway to Brahma. So, ni means definitive knowledge. Upa. What is upa means? Method of attaining self-knowledge. And there is only one path. Upa means near. First meaning of upa is we have to approach the self who is within every object in this world, living or non-living. In the non-living, it is in the form of existence. In the living, it is in the form of not only existence, sat, but chit and ananda. But even this chit and ananda are very, very minimal, minuscule at the beginning. As the soul evolves further, it evolves its brain. Brain means the ability to understand and appropriate body and mind. And it culminates in human body. And even then the human body has to go through three steps of, first it would be enveloped with tamoguna. Tamas means darkness. Then slowly, like a train approaching the ground, traveling in the tunnel, a faint glimpse of light comes. And that is where rajoguna comes out. Then after the rajoguna, as the progress is made, the light becomes more and more. And when we come out, it becomes perfectly clear, which is called sattvaguna. That is how Hinduism divides people into Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya and Brahmana. But even in a Brahmin's life, and that includes other varnas also, so life is divided into four, as you all know very well, should know very well, learning process, experimenting and experiencing process, and being disappointed with the results attained, thus slowly turning our face away from the external into the internal, which is called Vanaprasthashrama, and finally trying to abide with the self, in the self, called Sannyasashrama. So that is the only process. And we see this in several of the Upanishads, since we have discussed what we call Chandogya Upanishad in the 7th chapter, that great learned person who knows everything but whose mind was not under control, he approaches Sanat Kumara without guru. That is called approaching guru. Approaching guru in Sanskrit is called upasadhanam. Guru upasadhanam. You stay with the guru and then saruhim tadviddhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. So gradually one learns to surrender to the guru. Guru means right knowledge. So that right knowledge, as much as we surrender, right knowledge penetrates into the depths of our darkest unconscious, lights up, destroys old samskaras, slowly reveals the self that is abiding there. And that, when it is complete, it becomes self-knowledge, aham brahmasmi. So, upa means, first meaning is the desire to approach God. Second meaning is the way for that attainment of God is through the guru, upasadhanam. And the third meaning of upa means we must pay attention to all the actions that we need to do, not reluctantly, but with the greatest eagerness. That is the three meanings of the upa. Finally, the near upa means near, and the nearest thing to us is our own true self or God, and approaching him just as a dry straw. As soon as it approaches blazing fire, it becomes completely burnt out, becomes fire itself, or like the clarified butter ghee poured into blazing fire, it only feeds the fire. So one becomes completely one with one's own true nature, not becoming somebody else. Brahman is our own true nature. These are the three meanings of upa. First, a deep desire to approach God. Second, follow the teachings of a guru by surrendering, and guru tells him, first you do this, second you do that, any number of steps that are needed, and that is what is called rituals, then contemplations, finally shramana manana nididhyasana. So upa means brahma vidya. This is the primary meaning of the word Upanishad. So now, how do we get this knowledge? What is the meaning of knowledge? Knowledge means right understanding about any object, just as it is, not as we think it is. Just look back in your life. Look at the number of people that we come into contact, objects we come into contact with. Each one of us have got our own peculiar opinions. Not only this applies to strangers and others, it applies including to our own parents, to our own brothers and sisters, and including our own self also. All misconceptions start with the misconception that I am somebody else. So, for that, how does right knowledge arise? And right knowledge is called pramana. The word prama means to measure. So, prama means to measure. When we measure anything, let us say grain, if you have the right type of measurement, whether it is weighing or you put it, there is a vessel which gives you 100 grams, another vessel which gives you 500 grams, another, when it is full, will give you 100%. So, anything that gives us complete knowledge is called prama, to measure, that's why it's called. Prama means to obtain, through right means, absolute knowledge which will not be mixed with even 1% of wrong knowledge. That is called prama. And the instruments for this prama, right knowledge, are called pramanas. These pramanas are 6 in number, according to Advaita Vedanta. We have discussed, but just a brief recollection, just to recollect, what are these? In Indian philosophy, particularly within the school of Advaita Vedanta, pramanas are the valid means through which we acquire accurate, valid knowledge of the world and the self. Note down, we are not only talking about self or God, we are talking about the world. What is the condition of our present knowledge? God may or may not exist, but the world definitely is existing, and therefore it is real. Therefore, we should act and react according to this concept. What does Vedanta teach? Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. It goes completely opposite to what we know. A sincere student has to and will question the teacher, "Sir, my experience shows this world is real. Your Vedanta teaches this world is unreal. God alone is real. My knowledge is just the contrary, complete 100% opposite. How come?" Anyway, for that purpose, knowledge or the means of knowledge called pramanas are divided into two categories. The first category of pramanas should give us valid knowledge about this world, and we employ 5 means. And the first means that we employ is called direct experience, called pratyaksha pramana. And based upon this pratyaksha pramana, another 4 subsidiary pratyaksha pramanas are added. So you can say 1 pramana, or you can say 1 plus 4, 5 pramanas. The second category of pramana is called shabda pramana, because there is the knowledge of things of which we have absolutely no knowledge, because they are not pratyaksha, they are not directly experienceable. For example, that there is life after death, there are other worlds, and there are higher worlds and lower worlds, and there is also a God, and we are all experiencing the results of our own past lives. These are not available for any scientific knowledge. So science employs, and we also consciously and most of the time unconsciously experience five types of this means of acquiring knowledge. And most of the time we don't employ them properly, and that's why our knowledge will be not only defective knowledge but positively harmful knowledge. But to go briefly, so first category is, and only category really speaking, is called pratyaksha, perceptual knowledge. This is a knowledge gained directly through the five sense organs. So sight, hearing, smell, taste and touch, and combined with the mind. Mind is the internal perception of emotions like joy or pain, happiness, unhappiness. So as a simple example, you see a blue book on a table. Your eyes, our eyes, perceive the color and shape directly, giving us the valid knowledge that here is a blue book. And that also separates by the adjectives. What is the adjective? It is a book. Therefore, it is not a table, it is not a tree. And it is blue. So it excludes all other colors. That is called pratyaksha pramana. And as a derivative of this pratyaksha pramana, there are another four pramanas. Briefly, we will discuss in today's class and go to the shabda pramana in our next class. The second is called anumana, inference. So what is the inference? This is knowledge reached by using a reason to arrive at a conclusion based on a previously known universal relationship, also called vyapti. For example, this is a famous example. There is a hill in front of you, and one day you see smoke arising from behind the hill, and you don't know what causes the smoke, but you have observed in day-to-day life, when you lit a fire, and then smoke arises. So, smoke will not come unless there is a fire. Therefore, even though we do not see the fire, we infer that some fire is going on, and the result will be the smoke. Smoke is definitely caused by fire. Therefore, we infer. But for this, universally we observe, wherever there is fire, there is smoke. That is very necessary. That is called vyapti. Apply this to all these inferences. Therefore, when you see one part of our experience, not the other part, by seeing one part of the fact, we infer the other fact, and that is called anumana pramana. For that, very important to understand. So we must have experience of both things together invariably. Suppose you see fire, no smoke. So this inference becomes invalid. No. Every time we see a fire, there is a wisp of smoke, even from the driest firewood, and that is called vyapti, means universally applicable, observable. So we see only part of it, which is called smoke, and therefore, wherever there is fire, there would be smoke. So if you see the smoke only, we infer there is fire. That is the third is called upamana, comparison or analogy. What is this? This is knowledge gained by identifying any unknown object based on its similarity to a known object. For example, you know a person, he is such and such, but his brother is somewhere in America, you have never seen. And one day suddenly, you encounter this person, he looks almost like the person you know, and you observe carefully and say, oh, I heard some time back my friend telling me that his brother is coming back from America. That knowledge will come, but even without knowledge, this person looks like a person I have already known very well, and therefore this person must be related somehow to that person, whether it is a cousin, brother, etc. The famous example given in Vedanta is, we all know what is a cow, but suddenly in the forest, we see another animal almost resembling like a cow called Gavaya. Then somebody told us, oh, there is a animal you might see in the forest. It is called wild ox and it resembles our cow to a great extent. And as soon as you behold that, immediately you find out, so this must be that animal which was described to me. So seeing resemblance and inferring, this must be that particular animal, that is called upamana pramana. Then fourth is called arthapatti. Arthapatti means, artha means meaning, that is reasonable inference. Seeing a person, famous example is, you know, or many people know a person, and nobody has seen him eating during the daytime, but he is growing fatter and fatter every day. What is the inference? Nobody can grow without eating, and nobody can grow fat without eating oily substance, fatty substance. So this person must be gobbling up oily foods, plenty of it, more than he can digest at night, where nobody can see him. So by seeing an effect and you don't see any, what is called contradictory reason. So you guess this person must be doing this thing secretly at night. So to resolve this contradiction, not seeing him eating and still growing, we postulate that he must be eating at night, not only eating, plenty, not only plenty, most unhealthy subjects. That is called arthapatti. And fifth, I already mentioned anupalabdhi. You kept a book, always you keep a book in a particular place. One day it is missing and at night, 11 o'clock, after closing all your doors, you kept there. Next morning it is not there. So that absence of that object leads us to infer that book must have been taken by somebody to another room. If it is not in this room, it must be in the other room. And all the time, we use this arthapatti. Where is the officer? Oh, we saw him just entering into the office. So you rush to the office, but he is not there in his chair. That is, you don't see him. Then you guess, he must have gone to some other room to inspect or to ask or to have a cup of coffee or toilet, whatever it is. This is called anupalabdhi or non-perception of an object. And all of us use them wonderfully well. All these five pramanas are useful, applicable, and they must be applied meticulously if we want right knowledge, but they only apply to sensory knowledge. But with regard to supersensory knowledge, we require another type of pramana, which is called Veda pramana, Shabda pramana. So, we will discuss about it in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Mohur Mohoho. May Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.